With Tom's visual, we're going to talk this morning about the roads we choose and where those roads take us. Every road's headed somewhere. And yet somehow we struggle with this disconnect between the road that I chose and where the road goes. It's kind of a funny disconnect to have. I remember when I first time I ever stepped on the scales and it actually flipped up to 215 pounds. I'm going, what? Where did this come from? I had to look over it to see, but where did this come from? Gee whiz. Because I knew, I know the family I come from, my dad, my brothers, my family. I've seen my childhood pictures. I look like from Ethiopia during a lot of them. What in the world is this? I got married to Julie, and at that stage, there would have been what? Almost 35 pounds she wasn't legally married to. I mean, what in the world is this? How does that happen? You see, there's a disconnect between the road, the decision you make, and where the road goes. We're going to talk about that this morning. I remember being in Ames, Iowa, and headed back to Des Moines. And Des Moines has, it's pretty straight little drive. You can go down either 35 or you can take 69 Highway. And I remember getting on 69 Highway, headed south from Ames, Iowa, toward Des Moines. And the funniest, you almost have this sense of twilight zone when Boone, Iowa starts showing up. And you're going, Boone, Iowa? I don't remember coming through Boone, Iowa on the way up here. Well, you don't if you get on Highway 30 and head west. Boone, Iowa's there, but not on 69. There was a confusion, and then there was an embarrassment, because when you make a decision about a road, you don't get a lot of options. You get the result of whatever the road delivers. And that'll be kind of the core of where we are this morning. Our text is 2 Samuel, the 11th chapter. 2 Samuel chapter 11 is a text that is incredibly surprising. Sometimes some of us in the church are so familiar with Scripture that we sometimes forget to be shocked by what it says. Those of you that are maybe reading Scripture for the first time, there is no doubt that 2 Samuel, the 11th chapter, should shock you. And the reason it would shock us is this, because it is a lesson about David, and this is a guy I like. David is an honorable man, a good man, a godly guy, a guy you're rooting for, going, yeah, David, I'd like this guy. David, he's a hero. He wrote him to us who read it. He's the boy who trusted the Lord and faced the giant. He's the young man who I think handled as classy as I could ever imagine when King Saul was chasing him and trying to kill him. And David is just so honorable, never wobbles at all, at least in how he treats King Saul, at least in my view of the thing. And I'm going, gee whiz, this is a great guy. Have you read the Psalms? Sure you have. What would you do without Psalm 19 or Psalm 23 or Psalm 8? I mean, David writes great stuff that have been influential in our lives. All of us would vouch and say, I know what kind of guy David is. I really like David. Trouble is, I come to this chapter and I don't. And the reason I don't is a series of things take place. But ultimately, here's what happens. David makes a decision and he chooses a road. And once you make a decision about a road, the road goes where the road goes. Let's talk the story through. In 2 Samuel 11th chapter, it says it's at the spring of the year when the kings go out to make war because the weather is better for war making, and David doesn't go. Now, there are people who read all kinds of things into that. I don't know that you can read anything to it without just kind of imposing it. But David stays back in Jerusalem. But starting in the second verse, you can start making some stuff out of that one now. Because in the second verse, it says it's evening, and I don't know what time of night it is, but David can't sleep, and so he gets out of his bed, and he goes up on the top of his roof, which is a patio-type thing, and he's walking around on the top of his roof, and it's an evening that he is looking out over Jerusalem. And as he does so, something occurs that every man in this room would understand and recognize at some level. He catches something out of the corner of his eye. Did I see what I think I just saw? And his head snaps around and he looks. Yes, I saw what I just saw, because there is a woman somewhere in the proximity that is taking her evening bath, and she is not being discreet enough on where she is, and David has a decision to make. And he makes the decision. That decision is, I'm going to stand here and gaze and look. And he does. And when he does so, he chooses a road. He could never imagine where that road's going to go, like none of us. Quite frankly, once you choose a road, it's almost past your ability to imagine where that road goes. But he chose a road. As he stands there, he moves to the next step in the process, and he makes the decision, because it's on the road, he makes the decision to be curious. I wonder who she is. And so he sends someone, and the guy comes back and says, oh, this is so-and-so. In fact, there's a little history in that, too, in the background. But this is so-and-so, and her husband fights for you, and he's off at war. And immediately David hears there is no husband around. The text says she was very beautiful. In fact, you won't find that hardly anywhere else in Scripture. She was an extremely attractive woman. And so, no, David now knows who she is. He has now stood and gazed, and he knows that her husband's not around. And David starts the next step in the process of the road, which is he sends a few people over to go ask her to come see the king. The king wants to see her. Now, I don't make in any way Bathsheba to be innocent in this process. I don't know what all to make of Bathsheba's sequence of thinking, but she too chooses a road. When the king asked her to come, there's no doubt that if she had one brain in her head, it was not a, gee whiz, I wonder what the king wants with me. But she makes a decision to go, and when she goes, it all begins to spiral. David has an affair with Bathsheba. She sends him a note later and says, I'm expecting. He now has a problem. There's a girl who is expecting, whose husband's off at war, and so David does the next thing. He sends off and says, have her husband come and report and tell me about the war. And so her husband, who's off at war, he's going, since when have first lieutenant's been called back to give reports to the king about the war? What'd he call for me for? And comes in, and David shakes his hand and says, good man, boy, good to see you soldiers. Boy, I'm behind you guys all the way. Please know, yay, you know, I'm good job, good job. And how's it going? We're winning. Well, good, good. And then he says, you know what, since you're here, go home and feast and go ahead and stay with your wife tonight. The soldier looks at him kind of funny. And the sense of honor, you may not understand the culture it comes from, but the sense of honor, the soldier says, gee whiz, all my buddies are out, and we're at war, we're a nation at war, we have an army at war, and I'm feasting and staying in the house with my wife? That ain't right. No, I'm not stepping out of the soldier outfit till the war is over. And so he doesn't go home. David's got a problem. He's got to get the guy home, so we can get this story kind of straightened out for how we're going to tell the story later. David gets the guy drunk. Just keeps putting liquor to him till he finally gets drunk. Surely he will lose his self-discipline and go home then, and the guy doesn't go home. And then David does one of the most dastardly things. You're going, stone this guy. What is David doing? David writes a note, I'm sure in his own hand. And the note he hands to the soldier and says, take this to your commanding officer. And the soldier takes the note, never reads it. And he hands the note to the commanding officer, and the commanding officer finds a note that says, put this man at the front of the most fierce part of the battle, and when it's going hot and heavy, withdraw everybody else. And if he doesn't make it back, that'd be a real shame. David betrays his own soldier. And so Uriah is in the battle, and he is fighting on behalf. He's in the hottest part of the battle, and the next thing he knows, he's left on an island, and he is killed along with a handful of other. And so David has now removed the husband so that there's no one to protest and say he didn't go home. There's no one to say what happened here. And David brings in Bathsheba into his house, and he takes her as his own wife. And the last verse of 2 Samuel 11 is, And the thing David had done greatly displeased the Lord. Are you ever shocked at what happens? Are you ever shocked about other people and what takes place? Sure you are. I mean, we all have been. I remember when the guy who was most influential in getting me in the ministry, quite frankly, a guy, had he not come and sought me and helped me and been the bridge to get me in ministry, when he left his wife and his children and he started a church for homosexuals in California and got into a homosexual relationship, I was blown away. I didn't see it coming. I was shocked. I remember being shocked when somebody will come into the office and they will sit down and say, you know, I need to tell you something, and I'm sitting here trying to think, gee whiz, You're a well-respected lady. You've lived a long, full life with lots of good things, and I know lots of things about you. And she would lean forward and say, and just start bawling and say, look, I'm $80,000 in gambling debt. I can't tell my family. I don't know what to do. And you're going, gee whiz, where did this come from? It's the woman who will come in, and she will begin to say, she shocked herself. She's going to keep going, this is not me. Please know, this is not me. I don't understand, this is not me. And she begins to talk about being the affair that she's been in and how long she's been in the affair. And she keeps going over and over again, this is not me. It's the family in the financial mess. But when you visit with them, they keep saying, they're just shocked. This is not us. I don't understand how this could have happened. How did we do this? When we were made plenty of money, had we done something different? And I don't understand. This is not us. Everybody in this room, when we're reading the story of David, a good man with a good heart, when he has such a tragic train wreck, everybody in this room ought to slide forward on the front of our seats and say, oh God, teach me. Don't let me tear out the hearts of people. Father, don't let me scar your name. Please, God, what happened here? For none of us are immune from the principles that are at work. Let me start with two principles that are in this text. I'm going to borrow the wording of the two principles from Andy Stanley. He wrote a wonderful book called The Principle of the Path. And so please know I need to give credit where the statement of the two principles come from. But here's the first of the two principles. It's this. Every decision we make is the selection of a path. Let me say it again. Every decision we make is the selection of a path. Decisions are not standalone moments. All decisions initiate a journey or continue a journey. You can see it in obvious ways. I go to the restaurant, and they hand me a menu. And when they hand me the menu, again, these are simple little surface things. I look at the menu, I go, wow, should I order the thing that I would like to order, or should I order the thing I want to order? Should I order the thing that Julie would want me to order, or should I order the thing that I really don't want her to know that I ordered? I mean, you recognize it's a simple little decision, but whatever decision I make starts a path and a journey on whichever one. I wake up in the morning. Should I go exercise or not go exercise? Well, we'd all recognize, Randy, whatever decision you make, you're going to take a path. I mean, you get up and go, you've started a journey of something. If you don't get up and go, you've started another journey. We recognize that about all kinds of things. Finances. Whenever you go buy something and you take your money and you go to the store and it's shiny and it's big and it's black and it's this and this, and you look at it, when you buy your money, when you buy an item, you never just buy an item. What you've actually done is selected a financial journey you're taking. All decisions start the process of a path. That's true about simple things. It's also true about thoughts and habits and actions and attitudes. Here's the second principle. A path is a very non-discriminatory thing. The path doesn't matter, doesn't care who you are. You see, the path goes where the path goes. Once you choose a path, once you choose a road, it has no sense of discrimination. Who's ever on the path goes where the path goes. That's just the nature of it. For example, today, if you get on westbound I-44, may not even meant to get on westbound I-44. Maybe, I don't know what your thinking was, but if you get on westbound I-44, I guarantee you this, unless you intentionally change directions, you're going to Tulsa. Well, I don't want to go to Tulsa. Well, I don't care what you want to do or not. Westbound I-44 takes you to Tulsa. Yeah, but I'm not the Tulsa type. Well, you may not be the Tulsa type, but unless you intentionally change directions, the road goes where the road goes. The road is no respecter of persons. It treats everyone the same, regardless of your IQ, your education, your sincerity. I don't care what your goals in life are, your plans, hopes, or dreams. I don't care what church you attend. I don't care who your parents are. You get on westbound I-44, you're going to go to Tulsa unless you change directions. Let's take those two life principles and see how they play out on the life of David. And out of them should be a wake-up call. David made a decision. That decision, I don't know that I blame him for out of the corner of his eye what he caught and what he saw. And I don't have any sense whatsoever that it's not the natural tendency to say, what did I just see? But once he knew what he saw, he made a decision to stand and stay. And that put him on a road. Now, you can go through lots of logic for why he made that decision, but I guarantee you there's something that wells up inside of all of us whenever there are things that are destructive. It's just the nature of it. There's something that wells up from the inside of us that begins to pump adrenaline. In fact, there's a song that he heard in his head. As he stood there and gazed at this gal, this is... The problem is, the song that's actually playing is this one. Probably won't get some of you in the baptistry today. You recognize, don't you, that making a random decision as we sort of think we make, truth is there's two perspectives that occur on this decision. The perspective of what we think is happening, the perspective of what we tell ourselves is happening, and the perspective of what's really happening. And what's really happening is you've made a decision, and this is the road you've chosen, and the road goes where the road goes. Turn, if you would, to Proverbs, the 7th chapter. In Proverbs, the 7th chapter, there's a very clear illustration of how these things occur. In Proverbs 7, and by the way, this is about sexual issues, but this we're going to leave the sexual issues behind fairly quickly because this is about everything in life. This is about every spiritual and emotional matter. In Proverbs, the 7th chapter, in the 6th verse, there's a guy looking out the window and he watches a young man. Verse 6, "For at the window of my house I have looked out through my lattice and I have seen among the simple..." That's the naive. "I have perceived among the youths a young man lacking sense." Now, this illustration, by the way, is about a young guy, but quite frankly, there's no particular age boundary to stupidity. "And I saw him passing along the street near her corner, taking the road to her house." Now, you tell me what is going on in a young man's mind as he goes down the street and down toward her house. I guarantee you the song is playing, "Born to be Wild." Some grand adventure, adrenaline is pumping, this is great. Something wonderful may happen today. He meets her, she's a personification. Don't make this as too gender related, it's a personification. And in it she begins to say things like, "Hey big boy, hey big boy. You interested in a really good time today? I've been waiting for you. My husband's away. You ask him what he's going to, and his answer is, I'm like a celebrity going to a club. I'm headed to March Madness. I'm headed to the World Series. I'm headed to the Super Bowl. I'm telling you, life is good. I'm grown up. I'm a big boy. I ain't got tied to mama's apron strings. I'm headed somewhere that shows I'm a man. Look at verse 22. And all at once he follows her as an ox goes to the slaughter. What? Wait a second. I'm not an ox going to the slaughter. I'm a big boy headed to a big boy's party. No. No, you're an ox headed to the slaughter. You're like a deer caught fast till an arrow pierces its liver. You're like a bird rushing into a snare. And you do not know that it will cost you your life. That perspective is written on everything that I decide and wrestle with in my life. It's a young man that I really, really care about who has cried and sat and stared at the floor, and he said, I don't know when I became an alcoholic. I don't know how it happened. I didn't choose to become an alcoholic. I didn't want to be an alcoholic. But when it started, Born to Be Wild was playing. And he made a decision. It was a decision about how to look in a group and to fit in a group and to find my place and to show my manhood. And now his manhood, he struggles like crazy. What do I do? Because alcohol has emasculated most everything from my life. A concept that you need to hear, and I wish there were some way for us to play it about 12 times today, but my sermon already went a little long first hour, but that contrast between Born to Be Wild and the theme music of Jaws, every decision I make ultimately is rattling through those. There's no way that David got up that morning and said to himself, you know what, I think I'll wreck my life today. There's no way he got up and said, you know what, I think I want to embarrass the name of God. I think I want to humiliate my family. I think I want to stain my reputation. I think I might commit adultery today. And if it's a really good day, I might even get into murder before it's over. In fact, had we had a discussion with David, he would have said, man, I wouldn't do that. I have a better heart than that. Man, I got a better mind and heart. That's not who I am. And in a sense, that's true. God would even agree with David. You're right, David. You're a better man than that. But David, here's the problem. There are two principles always at work. They were at work when you walked in. They're at work when you walk out. You make a decision. You choose a path. And the path goes where the path goes. It's non-discriminatory. What you choose is a path. And the path then chooses what takes place. That in itself is absolutely critical to grab a hold of. It's true for all of us. You see it in blatant sexual ways on the television. Steve McNair, his teammates are just shocked. He's a great guy. By their, across the board, that was a great guy. And there was such shame and such regret and such brokenness for his wife and his four boys. How did that happen? Steve McNair would have said, man, I never wanted that to happen. But Steve, here's the problem. You make a decision, you chose a path, and the path goes where the path goes. You don't get to choose how the path turns out. You choose your direction. But once you choose a direction, the road determines how things turn out. Same thing's true of John Edwards and his wife Elizabeth. Everybody knows of a brokenness in that. Same thing's true of Governor Sanford. But please, let's not just make this about sexual issues. There's the single girl who's sitting here today. You want to know what your future holds? Talk to dozens and dozens of single girls who were just ahead of you. It was the single girl who wanted a godly husband. She wanted a man who was gentle and honorable and passionate about God. She wanted a man of substance and character. But in her impatience, she dated about any cute guy who would ask her out, about any guy who would make her feel good, and about any guy that would kind of heal this hole in her chest that sort of came from, I don't know what my place is, and I keep being a bridesmaid, and other people have their families, and why am I being left out? And in her impatience, she made a decision. She now weeps. Her marriage is so far from what she wanted. The man who she's married to is spiritually apathetic and relationally apathetic. And quite frankly, she's now playing the I've been wronged card. She's throwing out, God, how'd you let this happen to me? God, I prayed my whole life. God, how'd you let that happen to me? And the answer, sweetheart, is God's not mad at you. He wept too. Did you not understand that when you make decisions, it puts you on a road, and the road goes where the road goes? It's the man who wants to walk in a deep walk with God. He wants to be a godly man. He wants to do spiritually things that matter for eternity. And he gets up early every morning and reads the sports page. And he watches ESPN. And he takes his free time in the evenings and he goes into everything else. But he chooses nothing really deep in the life of the body. He chooses nothing that is really intimacy with God. He wants these things. His intentions are these things. He'd like these things. They're the longings that he has. But the decisions that he makes are all trinkets and baubles. And now he's frustrated. He's ticked at his wife. And he's ticked at the church. And he's ticked at life. Because things just aren't turning out the way they ought to. And he can't figure out why he's being left behind. Because there's a disconnect that all of us struggle with. That disconnect is that the decisions I make, even the small daily decisions I make, they put me on a path. And the path goes where the path goes. It's the teenage boy who wants a meaningful career. He wants to be a man of respect. He wants to make an impact in life. But his GPA reflects his social life and his lack of investment and self-discipline. And now he mopes through life as a 16 or 17 or 18 or 19-year-old boy. Can't figure out why his life stinks. Why nobody in his life seems to... And on it goes. You see, the directions we choose, not the intentions we have, determine our destination. Any chance that you came here this morning with a disconnect? Any chance that you've had this confusion about, hey, I'm a good person, and I got a good heart, and I mean well, and I'm not a bad person, and any chance that you have clung to those things to the extent that you're denying the impact of the decisions you're making? You're living with self-discipline on your own intimacy with God, your own sense of prayer life, your own Bible study, your own sense of rolling your sleeves up and getting up to your elbows in the lives of people to love on them. You're not doing it. You keep waiting for somebody else to come and pick you up and put you in ministry, the right ministry. You keep waiting for life somehow to evolve into a better thing for you, and you just sort of sleepwalk through your spiritual life, and then you can't figure out why Randy or Jay or Kevin or Wade or somebody should. My goodness, it's the church's fault somehow. We all struggle with that. Why do I have what I have? And the answer most often, we're going to pick up next week what happens when somebody else sort of sets you on a road, and we'll talk about that next week, but most often, it's just this principle. I reap what I've sown. And the principle of the path is I make a decision, and the road goes where the road goes. Proverbs 27, verse 12, gives this contrast. The prudent or the wise, they see danger and they take refuge. Can I sort of just, they see danger and they take action. But the simple, that's another word for the naive or the fool, but the simple keeps on going. The wise and the foolish see the exact same thing. They go to the same classes. They're in the same church. There's the same needs in the city. There's the same cultural crisis. They see the same thing, but the wise take action and the simple just keeps on going. So I thought about this. It's not one of my more proud moments, but Dover Hill has always been, in Joplin, one of the best places to ever go sledding, if you want to sled, you know, in the snow. They, I think, officially closed it here a while back for sledders, if I understand right. But years ago, when we had two little kids, and the south side of Dover Hill is terrific. It had a great snow on it. It was pristine looking. Everything is clean and neat and looks wonderful. And I remember getting Julie and one of the kids and myself, and we're on a sled, and I'm hearing Born to be Wild. I'm telling you, this is going to be really neat. It's only after you've gone over the crown of the hill that you begin to wonder, I wonder if those great big rocks that are here during the summer are... They don't look like rocks because they kind of got snow on them. I bet they're softer with snow on them. Now, that's my guess. And I remember this panicky feel of going down that hill, and the road goes where the road goes. And you're thinking, you know, a guy with an IQ above 47 probably would have thought about this before he went over the top of the hill. You see, it's just a simple reality. The wise recognize that they can connect the dots between tomorrow and today. That tomorrow and today are connected. And that if I want tomorrow to be impacted in ways that I've hoped and dreamed and prayed, and my wife has hoped and dreamed and played, and my kids, that I got to connect the dots in my own thinking and the decisions I make about the path I choose. So, you meet the foolish, and the foolish guy is still holding on to his anger and keeping going. The foolish individual still deciding to pout and keep going. The foolish individual is deciding to wait before they forgive. The foolish individual has decided to go on this happiness quest, the decision they've made. The foolish have decided not to repent yet. But you meet the wise. The wise are taking action. They're cutting up credit cards. They're having honest conversations with a godly friend. They're breaking up. They're moving out. They're putting the computer in a public place in the house. They're putting a filter on the computer. They're having all the websites they possibly could go to always emailed to a friend. The wise are setting the alarm clock. The wise are making the phone calls. The wise are saying, here am I. I've got my hands on it. I want to get dirty. I'm going to serve. The wise are taking actions. So who are you? What attitudes, demeanor, who are you? Let me see if I can do this briefly. As we live in this world, there are going to be two things that are going on, and you're going to have to choose one. There are going to be things that grab your attention. I mean, they just grab your attention. You're just walking down the street, minding your own business, and it just grabs your attention. Maybe I should say it this way. It grabs for your attention. It's big and it's black and it's shiny. It's on the corner and it's for sale. It's halfway down the block and it's got all these beautiful flowers and this wonderful porch and it goes way out here. I mean, it just begs and grabs for your attention. She's really pretty. I mean, she's gorgeous. And she's here for the summer. And somebody at least ought to make sure she's welcomed right. I mean, somebody just needs to look after her a little bit. After all, you got the kids, and life's kind of, I mean, and your husband kind of nods his head a little bit, and now this is one guy, and he begins to pay more attention, and in fact, he even says there's a website that he, you know, a spot that you can kind of connect with him, and there are things that grab for your attention. That's going to happen. When things grab for your attention, here's just a reality. If you give them your attention, you drift toward them. Whatever grabs for your attention, if you actually give it any attention at all, you'll drift toward it. It's the reason they tell you when you're passing a car, those of you that have been driver's ed, when you pass a car, don't look at the car you're passing. Why? Because if you look at the car you're passing, you'll meet it. When I was planting years ago on beans or corn or something, man, I'm guarantee you, you got a tractor, and if you want a straight row, you better look at one thing straight ahead, and you better not move your eyes much. If you decide to look left, the steering wheel moves left. The steering wheel moves right. Now that factor's going on, so there's things that are grabbing for our attention, and here's the second thing that occurs. Jeremiah says, please know, there's never a time in your life that you're entirely safe. Your heart is deceptive. Your heart will lie to you. Out of my heart comes a certain set of emotions, emotions of pride, emotions of lust, emotions of fear, emotions of all kinds that'll come. They'll come, and immediately, whenever whatever's grabbing for my attention pops up, she's young and pretty, or it's really big and we ought to buy it and I'd look really good in it. I don't know what it is. But when it grabs for my attention, immediately I have emotions that will draw a frame around it like a picture. I can frame things very well out of my emotions. My wife didn't treat me very well. My wife's been neglecting me for a long time. I feel like a piece of furniture in my own house. A thousand things I can say. I've been your preacher a long time, and I'm really tired of being treated this way in my own church. Gee whiz. And I did that revival, and they didn't pay me much. And I did that one wedding thing, and I got $20 for doing the wedding, or $15. Gee whiz. There's things in me that start framing anything that would grab for my attention. And as soon as I make that decision, I'm on a road. And the road goes where the road goes. Nobody in this room has said, I want to wake up today and mess up my spiritual life. Nobody in this room has said, I want to wake up and make just life miserable for my kids. Nobody in this room has woke up and said, you know, I just want to be a lousy employee every chance I get. Nobody in this room has said, you know, I want to live a full life, but I don't want to really count for Jesus. Nobody in this room has made those blatant decisions. What we did was simply had something grab our attention, and we framed it with our emotions. Can I tell you, there's a second thing going on. There are other things you have to give your attention to. Things you give your attention to. Remember in school, they always told you to pay attention? Pay attention. That sounds costly. That sounds hard. That sounds like you got to do some work to pay attention. And that's right. The things that grab your attention will come out of your emotions. The things you give your attention to come out of your values. And so the man who wakes up today and says, today I want to give my attention to my family. I want my family to experience what God would really have. That man who gets up and does that, that man begins to live with wisdom. The man who gets up and says, today I want to give my attention to a deeper walk with Christ. I want to give my attention to reaching a lost friend for Jesus Christ. I want to give my attention looking after the poor. I want to give my attention to the things that matter. That man will have things grabbing for his attention, but he makes decisions that put him on a different road. I'm not going there. I'm not going there. May even call the workman and say, I want a wall built on this side of my roof. A wall on your roof? Yeah, I want a wall on this side of my roof because I know what I want to give my attention to, and I don't want something grabbing my attention and pulling me other ways. That concept, every single one of us must be vigilant about. There's never a time we cannot ever stop realizing these two principles at work. Every decision I make puts me on a path. That's both good and bad. That means even if you've been on horrible roads, you could get up and walk out of here today and start making some right decisions in the sight of God. And immediately, what's it do? It puts you on the very path you want to go. And the path goes where the path goes.